Chapter 4. Introduction to Judge Munyon, aka Judge Minion, to Court Admin. What do you get when you cross the name Munyon and substitute the U with an I? You get Minyon. In all respects, Judge Munyon was an average attorney who was elected and became an average judge. However, once she hooked her career wagon to Belvin Perry, her name appeared as a 5th District judicial candidate during several appointment cycles. Alas, she was passed over by the 5th District more times than a nun wearing a habit in a bar. Understand, when your entire identity is influenced by a misogynist pig like Perry, then those in ultimate power think you ain't all that. And if you just happen to be a female judge, considering Perry's documented public sexual abuse background, those who select or appoint a 5th DCA judge might think that you had to do something, well, let's say something sordid with Perry to curry his favor. After all, Perry was a quid pro quo kind of guy. He would do nothing for you unless he received something in return. That something might be a sexual favor or maybe a vote for him to stay in power. It could be a Trump-like thing where he would make sure you would get what you want if your lips were permanently superglued to fat ass. However, in most cases, he traded favors for sex or votes. Personally, I wished that Munyon would have moved up to the 5th District Court of Appeals because she wouldn't have been at the court to fire me via Perry's wishes. How fucked up is that? A chief judge that is no longer even a judge has his hand shoved elbow deep into a naive female chief judge and is controlling her actions and movements like a demented puppet. That either makes Munyon the most myopic judge in the universe, or someone who has a shitload of skeletons in her own closet. Welcome to Judge Perry Land, the psycho theme park where pure insanity and zealous crazy-making is the cost of entry. If you consider the public, famous sexual harassment case involving Perry, then that doesn't make Munyon the idol for female empowerment. Inversely, her support of Perry infers that women should suck men's dicks and screw a lot to move up the corporate ladder. I have a daughter, and it would make me want to kill myself if she held Munyon's beliefs. At first, I thought that Judge Munyon might be the voice of reason, a somewhat sane person who could rein in Belvin Perry's pathological wrath, but unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. Judge Munyon sat in on all the meetings with me, Chief Judge Perry, and his girlfriend Jezebel. This is how these meetings would play out. Perry starts off with,
"Brett, I feel that Jezebel is underperforming, and something has to be done about it."
Jezebel smiles, and Munyon looks as though she had been given free admission to Disneyland. The happiest fucking place on earth. I don't immediately respond, giving Perry more time to unload his entire threat and giving me time to consider my gauged response. Perry says,
"If you can't get this employee to perform to what I consider her optimal level, then I'll have to find someone who can."
I knew a response was expected, but I also knew that any response had already been previously vetted by Perry and Munyon, and therefore their meticulously innocent counter-response would be issued. I looked to Munyon, hoping she might come to my rescue, but she didn't even make eye contact with me. She gazed at Perry as if he was the Pope. She had a bemused smile on her aging face, nodding her head after every Perry threat. Munyon's smile reminded me of that famous person. Ah, I can't remember. Hang on, let me Google it. Okay, I found it. Munyon's smile reminds me of Jeffrey Epstein's girlfriend, Ghislaine Maxwell. Now, when I see either Munyon or Maxwell smile, it really creeps me out. Side note, if you want to see a weird smile, check out her bio on the 9th Circuit Court's website. It looks like she's having a stroke on camera, like only half of her mouth is working. Creepy. I'm not sure out of the hundreds of photos taken of her by the court administration's media specialist, why she picked that one. What the hell was she thinking? This is the absolute best she could look? Oh, I love this one. Looks like I'm having a cerebral hemorrhage. Let's use it. I'm sure the 9th Circuit will remove this, so check it out on my website. It's a public record. So back to me in Perry's office. How deranged is that? If I told Jezebel to do anything, literally anything, then I would find myself back in front of Perry, Munyon, and Jezebel to further threaten me and my family's livelihood. The best I could muster was saying, I will certainly devote all my time to make sure that Jezebel has all the support, documentation, and assistance required to make her one of my best employees. God damn, I remember almost choking on that lie. I think I could have more easily negotiated a piece of steak that I had inadvertently sucked into my lungs. Perry and Munyon would have waited until they were sure I was dead before calling court admin to call EMS. And the entire meeting? Munyon said nothing. If she didn't understand what the fuck was happening, then she was either the dumbest person on the planet, or she had decided that Perry could drive her career forward, and therefore did nothing to protect me. She did nothing to protect the Ninth Circuit from Perry's crimes. And when she became a chief judge, she did nothing to protect our court's stellar reputation. And as I found out after Munyon became chief judge and immediately wrote me up with a formal reprimand, she was still a full-blown Perry supporter. During her first week of being a chief judge, she invited Perry to do a podcast with her. It's really sickening to hear Munyon pine over her muse. If you want to hear this podcast, and the Ninth also pulled that from their website, I downloaded it, and it's on my website. It's also a public record. I dedicated an entire chapter to breaking it all down. It's hard to say if this was love, infatuation, or simply a state of self-loathing for Munyon. Putting a label on it isn't important, because Perry was the answer to all her problems. And her problem was she was no one. She had no power. She had no self-fulfillment. Maybe her daddy didn't give her enough attention, so she was bound and determined to gain his respect. No one in court administration knew if she was Perry's mistress or his minion, but one thing was for sure. She had absolutely no reservations about the state paying $65,000 to settle Perry's straight-out sexual harassment lawsuit and then continually and blindly supporting him. It reminded me of Rudy Giuliani supporting Trump all the way to his ruin. Once Perry's sexual discrimination lawsuit was announced in the press, no female judge in our circuit wanted to be connected to Perry in any way, shape, or form, but not Judge Munyon. Apparently, Munyon thought the vile acts Perry committed were acceptable, even though he cheated on his wife and had sex with a court admin employee on his desk in his chambers in the courthouse during work hours. You know, little slip-ups, excusable shit. Don't take my word on it. If you're interested in how dirty Perry is, enter this into a search engine. I'll wait. I got fired. I have nothing to do with my time. Just totally broke and ruined by Munyon and waiting to die. Google Judge Belvin Perry Janice Williamson. Got it? Yeah, that's some revealing shit there, right? Who would ever assume that the National Enquirer got it right? They nailed Perry with a big fucking hammer right on top of his imperious head. Of course, real news agencies wrote articles about it as well, but I know stuff about Perry's affair and Williamson's settlement they don't know. For example, Perry went on the record by saying that Williamson was lying about everything and he never had sex with that woman. Does that sound like Clinton to you? Hell, he didn't even know the woman. Who was she again? Obviously, she was some court administration employee that was lying in order to further her career or extort money from the state. This all flew pretty brightly with the attorneys assigned to Perry's case by the state. I can't remember, but I think since Williamson was suing the state, the Florida taxpayers provided Perry with free representation. How fucked up is that? Anyway, Perry's attorneys wanted to get to the meat and taters of the truth and felt that Perry could have a point. This woman might be lying and trying to extort money from the state. It was as good of a defense as any. However, their dreams of telling Williamson to pound sand went out the window during a showdown between Williamson's attorneys and Perry's attorneys. When Perry, yet again, repeated that Janice Williamson was a liar, Williamson reached into her purse and threw a frozen condom on the table and said, and
test that for DNA. You can have that one. I have more in my freezer at home.
See, aren't you glad you bought my book? This is the great insider stuff that the public has never heard. After Perry and his paid-by-Florida taxpayers' attorneys shit their respective pants, the state immediately coughed up a cool 65 large to put an end to the state's legal exposure. It was as if the state paid for Perry to have sex. Did Perry offer to pay back the state? Hell no. He considered it the state's obligation to pay for his sex. In order to make an offer to Williamson, Perry's attorneys had to consider the worth of Williamson's pussy. In my mind's eye, I can see them questioning Perry. Will 65. Kay cover it, Belvin? Was she worth it, or should we give her less? How good of head did she actually give? We think it's a good deal. She wasn't all that great in bed. Right, Belvin? Damn. I wonder in the poor area of town, on the open market of dumpy bars and back alleys, how much sex Perry could have purchased for 65K. Probably a lot of quantity, but low on quality. I'm thinking toothless blowjobs and sex that would require a condom as thick as a garden hose. If I was Janice Williamson, I would have held out for a lot more money considering she had to fuck this pig to keep her job. Then, as soon as she was done being Perry's whore, he had court administration fire her. If you haven't seen Perry, he's approximately the same height as he is wide. It would be like fucking an obese Oompa Loompa, just not nearly as orange. That should be worth at least a quarter mil. Oog, and then Janice fucked him for 2 whole years. I think that should get her at least a few million more. Perry said he was very sorry it happened, but like those criminals he'd sentenced to death, he was only sorry that he got caught. If it hadn't been for that frozen condom, this blemish on Perry's amazing career would have never surfaced to the public. He might have moved on to the 5th DCA and then up to the Florida Supreme Court to join other justices who also had narrow escapes. For that, all of us should thank Janice Williamson's cocksock and its contribution to the betterment of Florida residents. This happened to be the one and only case that made it into the public realm. Behind the scenes, behind his chamber door, behind many hotel doors, Perry was taking advantage of more court administration females. The sexual harassment incidents didn't even slow down, yet court administration dutifully protected Perry from his women problems, which eventually turned into a full-time job for court administration. Perry would walk into court administration and hand them a piece of paper with a name and phone number scribbled on it as if it was handed to him in a bar. He would then issue the simple command,
"Hire this woman."
That was it. He didn't mention the job he wanted them to have, or their qualifications, or even why he wanted them hired. This happened time and time again. Court administration blindly hired Perry, his new girlfriend. Hiring them was easy. All you had to do is call them and tell them they had a job and could immediately start working from home forever. Firing them was not so easy. When these young and mostly white females wouldn't put out anymore or became a problem, then Perry instructed court admin to fire them. Why fire them? Because if they remained at the court, they would become the next Janice Williamson, and that would probably put an end to Perry's career. I believe the current court administrator told me this happened at least 4 times while Perry was the chief judge. At the end of this book, I'll summarize the safeguards that should be put in place to prevent this craziness. But at this point, I want to state that a Florida chief judge should have absolutely no say in the hiring and firing of court administration personnel. Their unchecked ability to say who comes and who goes means that no one in court administration can protect their own employees. They can't even protect their own jobs. There is simply too much temptation for a corrupt attorney who becomes a chief judge. Okay, jumping forward with Munyon near the end of Perry's demented reign as chief judge, the Supreme Court instituted chief judge term limits, so instead of sticking around and becoming a common judge, Perry decided to quit the court. Perry couldn't imagine the Ninth Circuit without himself at the helm. During the podcast Munyon set up to pay a tribute to her god Belvin Perry, she asked him why he decided to retire from the court. Perry gave some stupid reason, like he took over the probate division in Osceola and almost worked himself to death. But court admin knew the real reason. Perry was so fucking arrogant that he didn't want another chief judge to give him assignments. After all, Perry hadn't been required to do anything for decades, and the thought of going back on the bench without Casey Anthony's hot ass prancing around in front of him was an affront to his ego. Perry didn't think a woman should replace him as chief judge, which is why he refused to position Munyon to be the court's next chief and instead cultivated a man for the job. Now, years later, Munyon's hopes of being appointed to the 5th DCA were a pipe dream. So what was the next step for her aspirations to become a someone when during her entire life she had been cast in the role as a no one? The answer was to become a chief judge. This is the highest rung on the shortest ladder an insecure judge can achieve. Becoming a chief judge for an attorney is like becoming president of the United States. However, similar to the president of the United States, the best candidates that would do the best job don't want the job. Most judges who are there to actually do judge work, you know, like trials and stuff, don't want the position of chief judge. They are there to make a difference and want to practice law. They have no interest in hiring and firing court admin employees and handing out judicial assignments. That's boring to competent judges who have both respect and a love for the law. You have to have a massive ego to want to be a chief judge, and little else. Those who were elected as chief judge felt they had made it. They had grabbed the golden ring and achieved the highest level in a circuit court. Now they can retire and die, fully fulfilled in their life's accomplishments. When Lisa Munyon is old and can't get off the couch, she can read her bio over and over in order to pacify her ego. Most judges wouldn't be satisfied with that. They might have started a huge law firm and become rich. For Munyon, at this stage of her life and career, being the chief judge was everything. I believe if she knew she could get away with it, that Munyon would have actually killed to become our circuit's next chief judge. All of those rejections for the 5th DCA. All of those years of being Perry's minion. All those years watching men become chief judges. So where was the payoff for desperate Judge Munyon? The golden ring was being elected chief judge of the 9th Circuit Court of Florida. It was like being the prom queen she never was. At least she didn't state that in her bio. However, for Munyon, it really didn't play out that way. Not only did Perry not set her up as the next chief judge when he split, but when she ran for chief judge, a new, relatively unknown Judge Myers beat her out for the position. This was an interpolitical faceplant for Munyon when unknown Myers was voted in as the chief judge. It was a massive ego hit and a full-blown bitch slap to her fragile reputation. Why? Because Judge Myers was a total tool. He became a chief judge during COVID, yet this numbskull wore a suit to the court every day, even though there was no one working in the building. We were all working remotely. Why in the fuck would you wear a suit to a courthouse with no one in it? The answer is that you're a chief judge with no connection to reality. Myers was a Bible-thumping, cleaner than a shit judge. You know, in high school, he was the student that ratted out all the boys smoking in the bathroom. I can see him at home straightening each tassel on the throw rug before stepping out the front door. In my mind's eye, I can see him home, sitting on the edge of the bed, naked, with a short leather whip, lashing his back over and over as he makes amends for perceived sins he committed that day. Myers was yet another fucking asshole judge who thought his elevated position made him the bomb. Well, he was certainly a bomb by blowing up Munyon's run for chief judge. That still puts a smile on my face. We might not have a lot of work-related enjoyment in court administration, but watching our egomaniac judges fighting it out in front of all the other judges is really a bright spot in our day. Jumping back to Munyon having been beat out by an unknown scrotum head judge, she was devastated. During Judge Myers' entire rule, Munyon plotted her revenge. She launched an internal smear campaign, which surprisingly worked. No one is sure how much Perry participated in her bashing of Myers because by that time Perry was a private attorney and no longer at the court. But sure enough, at the next chief judge election, Munyon was elected as the new chief judge. She went unopposed because court admin had taken a straw poll that showed Myers was going to lose. The day after Munyon took the big chair, Myers gave his resignation, apparently not interested in Munyon assigning him to work at the jail for the next 4 years. Great for Munyon. However, knowing how umbilically she was connected to, now just an attorney Perry, court administration was amazed that she was still Perry's biggest supporter. I mean, she could have cut her ties to this misogynist warthog, but no. For some bizarre reason that no one on the 21st floor of court administration could understand, she clung to that insidious relationship. Why? Was she so enamored with Perry's 20-year control of the court that she thought this was the only way to stay in power? What Munyon didn't understand was that being connected to Perry at the hip was actually a career death sentence. If not for this book, she might have kept her chief judge status, but after all her faux pas, any judge that would vote for her again has absolutely no respect for women in the workplace. So Munyon knew all this information. All of us knew all these documented factual discretions of Belvin Perry. Yet Munyon persisted in being Perry's best goddamned friend and biggest supporter. How low of self-esteem do you have to subsidize that type of friendship? In short, just like all the other depressed women Perry preyed on. Mignon determined that her ability to rise would be dependent on Perry's ability to rise, in every sense of the word. That's a penis joke if you didn't get it. Did Mignon and Perry have a sexual connection? Who knows? Sure, they were behind Perry's chamber door more often than any other female in Perry's life, but it still comes down to mistress or minion. Who knows? Maybe both. I didn't want to add all the shit that Mignon had court administration post on her official biography court webpage, because it's boring. But even the most rational citizen can see both the self-doubt and almost a degree of desperation in her court bio. Damn, why didn't she post her high school grades as well? Her list of lifetime achievements is longer than this entire chapter. For just this audiobook, I'm going to omit her bullshit, but if you want to read it, it's in the free read on my publisher's website.